Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Folks, we're nearing the end of the season. It's almost time to say goodbye to everything that we've had together. The Ottawa Senators, the Sedins, all of it. All the things that have made this show what it is. But we're not done yet, folks. I'm Dave Lozo, here in Brooklyn, in the luxurious sound studios at the Vice offices. And you know my Canadian podcast partner in Ottawa.
Hey, everybody. I'm Dave's Canadian podcast partner. I'm in Ottawa.
Yeah. There you go. How was your weekend? How was life? How was life without me? Because we waited as long as we could to do the live show with you. We held the curtain for like 30 minutes, and you never showed up. So
yeah, dude. I was like, it takes a long time to run there from the airport. I was like,
man, I know you're a big fitness guy, but I mean, you could have just
got there and the place was like locked up, and I don't know.
Oh, you got there after we left.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That is just... People were asking. They were like, hey, where's that other guy who loves the Sedin so much? And I was like, I don't know. He said he was coming, but sorry. So we had to refund all the money for the tickets, and but it's fine. Nobody seemed upset.
I hate to see that.
So we have an hour to get to some stuff. We're going to, you know, go over what the Canucks got to do now without the Sedins back next season, how they're going to fill that void both on the ice and in the locker room. Little draft recap stuff, trades, and looking forward to free agency. But specifically off the bat, the number one free agent that we need to talk about is Michael Kempney. Now, Michael Kempney is a Stanley Cup champion who, unlike John Tavares, has won it all once. So we're going to focus the first 42 minutes on Michael Kempney. Does that work for you?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So you think he stays in Washington?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. All the teams he's got coming in to speak to him, and
I know
all the presentations and everything.
It's like, do you want to have the 8 years of security, or do you want to get the 7 when, you know, Toronto comes in and just blows your doors off with a $42 million? I don't know. I'm envious of the kid. It's tough, but like it's a great place to be in, right?
It is tough. I'm happy. Right. We got what we wanted. We got a John Tavares sweepstakes. Like got to the window. He didn't do what it was starting to look like he was going to do, which was like get to 2 days before and then bail on the whole thing and just sign whatever the Islanders put in front of him. So we've got the presentations. We've got John Tavares holed up in a hotel in LA. We've got media staking it out to figure out who comes in and when and whether they're smiling on the way out. And it's probably all going to end with John Tavares just signing with the Islanders after all. But at least we get like a few days of fun and speculation and all this other stuff.
Isn't it weird that the Islanders are pitching? Like they've had
it's
like
super
months.
Weird. That is like,
so weird.
What were they doing all the last few weeks when we were told that they were constantly talking to John Tavares? Why? And like when you heard that Lou Lamoriello and the Islanders were headed to LA, that kind of made sense. Like just be there. If there's a question, if there's anything that comes up, you're right there. You know, you drop everything and you go talk to John Tavares on a moment's notice if you need to. That seems smart. But then to find out that they're presenting, and also that they're presenting second. Like, You think they would either go first or last? Like, I could see if they got to you do all the presentations for the other teams, and then you have the Islanders come in, because then you can say, okay, here's what we heard. You know, give us, here's your last chance to keep us. You know, now that we know what we know from the other teams. But like, for them to just come in, just be second, I don't know.
Hi, my name is Lou. This is Barry. You can call me Mr. Lamarillo. I'm the GM of the New York Islanders, and this is Barry Trotz. He is now the coach of the New York Islanders. Let me tell you about the wonderful things in Brooklyn and Long Island. And you're like, wait, what? I live there. I know, but have you ever lived there? And then there's like this, like, you know, splashy video where like it's like John Tavares' head, like, you know, photoshopped on like a guy riding a horse or something. Like, have you ever ridden a horse in Long Island? We're gonna give you horse money. And there's like music playing and stuff. Yeah. Like,
have you ever pictured yourself as a New York Islander and it's just John Tavares' head photoshopped onto John Tavares' body? And he's like, why would you do that? I did like fact that they've got him coming in right after the Maple Leafs, which leads me to believe it was just nothing but Lou Lamoriello just crapping on the Leafs organization for 3 hours, just being like, here's why everything they just told you was a total lie.
Or like, it's going to be great when like Dubas walks out and like Lamoriello walks in and there's like that awkward stare down as they pass each other in like the CAA hallways, like, hey, what's up?
Hey, what have you been up to?
What's up?
Oh, just doing your old job, you know.
Just running the Leafs. What are you doing? Oh, you're not running the Leafs anymore. Oh, yeah. That's right, because I am.
Who are you? Yeah. Who are you with? Oh, you found someone. That's great. Who? The Islanders. Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, the Islanders. Interesting. Sure. Oh, they got that John Tavares guy. Oh, no, wait. They might not have that John Tavares guy. Oh, that's too bad, Lou. Yeah. It's weird, too, how, not weird, I guess, but, like, the whole thing is in L.A., and, like, the Kings and Ducks aren't even just, like, hopping in their cars and, like, driving 10 minutes to just go pitch. Just to do it. Just to be like, hey... Yeah. You want to play with Corey Perry? No? Okay. We just had to ask. You're right here. You're right around the corner. It's a $6 Uber to come here. So yeah. We just thought we'd ask. So that's fine.
Let's start with just the list. The six teams that he chose to talk to. Because I think that on its own was sort of surprising.
There's some teams on the list where you're like, yeah. And then there's Boston. And you're just like,
Boston? It's good that they're... Yeah. So he's got.
They're going, but
he did Toronto and the Islanders on day one. Day two is Boston and San Jose. Boston's a surprise. San Jose, we all kind of. I think a lot of people figure San Jose is probably the favorite if he doesn't go back to the Islanders.
Yeah,
that San Jose's kind of checks all the boxes of what he might be looking for. And then Wednesday is what? Wednesday's is Dallas and Tampa.
Is Nashville on that one too? Are they doing like all the income tax free
states?
No,
apparently no. Apparently Nashville's there's like Nashville, Vegas, Montreal, and maybe a couple other teams where they don't get to present, but they might do a phone call. Like, I mean, talk about clearly being put in your place, but they could tag in late in the process and either come present or do it over the phone, but.
I wonder if in the meeting, it's like the meetings in the movies where there's a negotiation going on and then the guy, like a GM, just writes down a number on a piece of paper and just slides it over like all cool like, and then like John Tavares picks it up and shows it to Pat Brisson and they nod or they order security to like throw Jim Neal out of the room. I want like details. Like, I've always wanted to sit in.
I want to see
an arbitration hearing, but I've never thought about this. Like, I think I'd want to just be in the room just to hang out.
Yeah, especially this, because I feel like the teams are maybe doing like very different things. Cause I mean, they're 3 hour meetings. It doesn't take 3 hours to just say 7 years, 12 million a year. I mean, yeah, you're going to show a little brochure for the city and all of that. But like
what do you think they tell John Tavares about like the Maple Leafs that he doesn't know already? Like,
you know what? I'll tell you two things I'd be willing to bet happen at that Leafs. Here's my prediction or my gut feeling on what the Leafs threw at him other than the same stuff that everyone else is. I think two things. I think number one, they pull out the Leafs jersey, carefully folded.
Mm-hmm.
They put it down on the table. They begin to unfold it. First, he sees the Leafs logo on the shoulder. Kyle Dubas flips it over. It's got the 91 on the back. Unfolds that. You see the Tavares nameplate. And then he flips it over to the front, and you got the Maple Leafs logo on the front, and above that, is the captain's C. And they basically tell him, you will be the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs if you come sign here. You're day one. You are captain of the Maple Leafs. And the other thing that I think they, because this was kind of hinted at, I can't remember if it was Elliot or Chris Johnson or somebody kind of mentioned, I think it was Elliot Friedman, that I guess when the Cubs, did you see this, where the Cubs were,
I
think it was
movie,
John Lester.
Like movie magic or whatever to like get
John Lester to sign. Yeah, they did like a CGI thing of the Cubs winning the World. I can just picture some sort of CGI movie thing of the Leafs winning the Stanley Cup. And, you know, it's done. It's like a first person, like you're looking around the crowd going crazy as, you know, and then everyone's celebrating. And then you see like a little CGI Gary Bettman comes out and he's and somebody and they probably hired some like the world's best Gary Bettman impersonator to come out and go, Toronto, you've waited a long time for this. John Tavares, come get the Stanley Cup. And then it's just the goosebumps and chills in the room as John Tavares pictures himself not just being part of the Leafs Stanley Cup winner, but being the guy who gets to go over there and lift the Stanley Cup after 50 plus years or whatever. And like, that's it. That's what the Sharks can't offer you. That's what the Bruins, whoever else can't offer you. You get to be that guy who's going to be in the most famous moment and photograph and everything else in Toronto Maple Leafs history and Canadian hockey history for the rest of your life. That's the selling point.
Okay, be honest with me. Did Kyle Dubas hire you to write the script for the video? Because I feel like
this
is way too detailed that you know too much about it.
He didn't, and I may have thought too much about it. And this may be an improvement on my original plan of just showing like Wendell Clark highlights for two straight hours. Maybe that's the last
2.5 hours. Maybe the first half hour is jersey offer video, and then it's here's Wendell Clark just doing stuff.
Yeah. Because that's it. That's the selling point if you're the Leafs. Because you can't, the Leafs can't win on money because they have tons of cap room in year one, but it tightens up after that. And even if they can match, even if they can beat the money for Dallas or Tampa or whoever, they lose on the taxes. So he's going to make more money going somewhere else. So they can't get him on that. You know, you can get him on quality of team and chance to win, but if that's what he's going for, Tampa's still a better fit.
Yeah, Nashville.
Nashville's a better fit.
San Jose's so pretty good too.
San Jose's in the ballpark at least.
They had 100 points last year. I mean, I kind of forget that San Jose was as good as they were. I mean, they were missing Joe Thornton for half the year and they still had a 100-point season. So
San Jose, put it this way, even if you don't think San Jose's as good as the Leafs could be, they're close enough that when you factor in all the other things about like living in the Bay Area and everything else, that's enough. You're like, you know, I know people kind of roll their eyes whenever any original six team, but especially the Leafs, like breaks out like the history and like, oh, the tradition and it, you know, wouldn't it be, but you know what? That's your angle. And if that matters to them, then you have a chance to win. And if it doesn't matter, then you weren't going to win anyways. So, you know, take your shot. Like this is, you know, the message to John Tavares would be, you know, come to Toronto, be the captain, be the guy who wins the Stanley Cup here. And you say, look, man, Mark Messier played more NHL hockey than pretty much anyone other than Gordie Howe, just about. Played for 20 years, won everything you can win, won Hart trophies, All-Star, went to, you know, Mark Messier did absolutely everything. And the very first thing that most people think of when you say the name Mark Messier is that image of him getting the Stanley Cup.
In the league. Oh, the Stanley Cup.
There's that. Assuming you're not a Canucks fan, you picture him getting the Stanley Cup from Gary Bettman. That is the enduring Mark Messier image. That and the guarantee, but like the one, like show me a photo of Mark Messier, it's him taking the Stanley Cup from Gary Bettman, because that is the moment that people remember him for.
Okay.
And you've got a chance to have that same moment in Toronto. And again, like John Tavares might hear that and just roll his eyes and like be looking at his agent, like making the wanking motion, like get these guys out of here with this. And fine, a lot of people would have that reaction, but that's your shot. You're not gonna, you know, you're not gonna win on money. You're not gonna win on Toronto's a nice place to live because everyone else can at least match you there, if not beat you. This is your one area. So that's, you know, go heavy on it. And if it doesn't work, then it was probably never gonna work. And at least you took your shot.
Let me throw this there out at you, the Canadian Bureau. is it possible that John Tavares would prefer San Jose because he wouldn't have to be the captain? Because if he goes to Toronto, he's going to have to be the captain and be at the forefront and deal with the media every single day. While in San Jose, he's going to be a leader there for sure, but he's not going to have to be the guy wearing the C. It's going to be a more relaxed environment. And I don't know. I always get the vibe from him that it's not that he hates being a captain. Like, I think he likes it, but I just think being a captain in Toronto would bring about more stuff that maybe he wants to deal with. So I wonder if when they unfurl the jersey, maybe it's better that it has no C on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, but I think, first of all, if he comes to Toronto, the media attention is going to be insane.
Every day.
No matter what, whether he's captain or not. And he knows that. And the fact that he's at least willing to talk to the Leafs suggests that he would be okay with that. But yeah, this is the kind of thing where, like, I assume, and this is why I'd love to be behind the scenes on this stuff. Like, I assume there's a lot of, I mean, I was going to say due diligence being done. I think it's more than that. Like, I think there's a lot of, like, you're just trying to get any information. Anyone who's ever known John Tavares, you're trying to talk to them and be like, what makes him tick? What is he like? What is he, has he ever said anything about what he would, you know, what appeals to him? How do we tailor this in a way? Because you're right. Like, maybe the Leafs have been doing their due diligence and they found out that, like, John Tavares is the last guy who would go for any of that, you know, silly tradition stuff. That's not what makes him tick, in which case you assume you don't do it. And maybe that's why they wouldn't. But yeah, like, I mean, I can't imagine these teams are just walking in going, oh, I think maybe he'd like it if we did this. Like, there's got to be, like, people tracking down old roommates and, you know, former girlfriends, whatever else. Just be like, tell us something. Give it, like, let us build a profile of this guy so that we can go in 2 hours and convince him to uproot his whole life to come play.
I wonder if, like, if you get to, like, the 90-minute mark of the three-hour thing and you feel like you're not winning him over, do you just, like, change the tone of it for the last 90 minutes where you're just like, all right, we're not going to get this guy. All right, I got an idea.
Yeah.
Hey, do you have any weaknesses in your body where, let's say if you got checked there, maybe it would break? Like, how are your ligaments in your knees? How are your ankles? Do you feel like you have a weak Achilles? It's just standard questions we ask all free agents if you think, you know, we're going to sign them.
Yeah. It's, you just be like, yeah, you know, we just want to know, you know, do you have any sort of personal flaws or anything like that? Like, are you like a habitual, like a habitual liar at all? Like, anything like that? Oh, okay. It's just, we're wondering because, like, you know, other famous players have been, like Steve Eiserman. I don't know if you knew Steve Eiserman, but, yeah, he's a terrible guy. Don Sweeney, I think, was another one who they really had a problem with. Oh, are you talking to them tomorrow? Oh, no, we didn't know that. But yeah, you just got to go into torpedo. I think if you're the Leafs and you realize it's not going well, you got to start selling hard on San Jose and just get him to, like, the Pacific. It's just like, be like, dude.
Yeah, man. It's like,
that'd be our second choice. It's like, and San Jose apparently is bringing in the players.
Yeah, they're bringing Evander Kane, I guess, for the new guy perspective to give John Tavares the new guy feeling of what it's like when you first get there. And they can just say things like, oh, the guys were so great to me, blah, blah, blah. You fit in great there. And you bring Joe Thornton there because he's 38 and he keeps getting 1 year, $8 million deals now, or just like short contracts. Like, he can just be like, John, when you get older, like, they're never going to let you go. They're just going to keep throwing tons of money at you. I got a 1 year, $8 million deal last year. $8 million at 37, man. Like, when you're 37, that'll be like $15 million. Yeah. You have to come out here.
And then Thornton will be like, or Tavares will be like, wow, that does sound awesome. Like, what's your contract for this year?
Funny thing. You know what?
Imagine that when, like, Thornton really sells him and Tavares is like, okay, I'll sign. And Doug Wilson's like, yay. Okay, Joe, get out of here. We don't have room for you anymore.
Yeah, it turns out that John Tavares said the only way he signs is if you don't sign. So, this is awkward. We're going to have to let you go.
How great would it be if Joe Thornton convinced him to go to San Jose, and then he signed, and then Joe Thornton signed with the Islanders for like $13 million? It was like, ha. So. My favorite part of that, though, is that they're bringing in Evander Kane to, like, sell him on, I guess, San Jose. What a great place, San Jose. It's like, dude, you played in Winnipeg and Buffalo. Like, of course San Jose was an upgrade.
Plus he just got there. Like, what's he going to be like? There's really great Chipotles. The hotel that I lived in was awesome. No,
he's going to tell the story about Joe Thornton picking him up at the airport. The most impressive thing that anyone has ever done.
Yep.
Oh, that was...
No one's ever done that before.
Nobody's... I wonder what other things they could do, Joe Thornton could do to... I wonder, like, he can't pick Joe... Maybe he did pick Tavares up at the airport. Maybe he just drives an Uber, like, in his spare time, and it was just coincidence that...
I wish I could get that much credit for an airport pickup. Oh my God, you're the greatest person ever. You pick me up at the airport. Well, I mean, I live 15 minutes away and we've been married for 4 years. So I just think that's probably okay. I probably have to do that, don't I? Isn't that like required in the vows? I don't know.
Like John Tavares, like the thing that really sold me on San Jose was that Joe Thornton agreed to arrange my cable hookup and he made all the phone calls and got the, it was really nice.
He set up my router. I didn't know how to set up my Wi-Fi or my internet. And then he's just like, no, you tap this button and it resets. Like, oh my God, I love it out here. What a leader you are. So where do you think he ends up? What do you think the final answer is going to be?
I mean, I still think it's the Islanders. And I think that's all signs are pointing there. If I'm an Islanders fan, I'm not worried now. I don't worry until... they're doing the presentations Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Thursday would be the day ideally that I'd hear that. That's when we heard on the Stamkos signing. It was the day after where we found out in the middle of all that other stuff that was going on with Weber and Hall and everything. We found out Stamkos was staying. If I'm an Islanders fan, I'm excited when I wake up Thursday morning thinking, you know, today's the day we're going to hear. If I haven't heard anything by Friday, I start getting nervous. If we make it to the weekend and I haven't heard, then I'm getting really nervous because it's like there's no reason for him. He can't sign with any other team until July 1, but he can sign with the Islanders anytime he wants. So if he decides to stay in New York, there's no reason for that to get to July 1st. He can do that Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So if we get to Sunday and we're that official signing period is opening, that's when I'm in big time panic mode if I'm an Islanders fan. But I would assume that we're gonna probably know before then, even if he's going somewhere else. Like that would, he'll inform that team because he's not gonna go into free agency. You wouldn't think. And take like 5 days to make his decision because, these teams have got like, they need that money somewhere else. They need to like, he'll be the first domino to fall, so to speak. So I think we'll know one way or another, but certainly if it's, if we haven't heard, it's not bad news for the Islanders until let's say Saturday. And then you really start to worry.
Yeah, the weekend's probably, if it gets to the weekend, that's probably a bad sign. But I think I'm leaning Sharks. Like I understand all the reasons why a guy would stay with his team and after all this, because it's just hockey and that's what they do. But I don't know. Like something about Doug Wilson getting the money, Bodker's money off the books. I feel like he just knows. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's got an idea that John Tavares wants to come there. He's freeing cap space. And yeah, you can free the cap space and then fall back on Paul Stastny, but I don't know. I feel like San Jose is like the perfect fit for John Tavares as a player, his personality. He's not going to have to go there and have all this pressure of winning a cup. I mean, yeah, San Jose is kind of desperate for one after all those years, but like Toronto maybe brings an element of something that he doesn't want. Nashville doesn't really, I don't think, have enough money. They probably have to work the roster a little bit. Dallas is just Dallas. I don't know why in the hell you go to Dallas. Boston's cute. I like Boston giving it a try. There's no harm in that.
They got in the door.
Like Don Sweeney like greased the palm of the guy outside the door. Like, hey, maybe give me a little table next to John Tavares in the meeting room. And they're like, all right, okay, go on in, buddy. But yeah, I think it's either the Islanders or the Sharks because hockey players never want to change their address. They never
because,
do.
Yeah, I mean that's the most likely. I think San Jose out of the non-Islander teams is the favorite. Because the other thing is they've got the cap room, but unlike, Nashville and Tampa, like Nashville and Tampa could make cap room. But if you're Tavares, you're sitting there going, okay, well, but what does that mean? Like who do you remove from that roster where I'm going to come in the door and everyone's going to be like, oh yeah, look, it's, this guy is the reason we don't have these other two guys. And right off the bat, you've got that pressure versus San Jose where it's, they can fit him in right away.
And also, are they telling John Tavares this in the meeting? Are they like, hey, look, you come here, we're going to make Ryan Callahan disappear. Don't worry.
Yeah.
We'll find, is he going to be privy to like those moves? Yeah,
I'd
you
ask
have
that
to,
question
right?
If I'm John Tavares. I'd say, like, where does the room come from? And, you know, specifically, who are you thinking of moving out? Because, yeah, I mean, if they turn around and say, maybe we can't, we got to move Ryan McDonough. Well, okay, hold on a second. You know,
right.
You're not the same team without that guy. So, yeah, it's... I think that's probably a fair that's the point where they finish the PowerPoint and the last slide is always like any questions. That's that's where you lean into that.
So where's Nikita Kucherov going to be? Funny story. Ooh. He's always wanted to play in San Jose. San Jose, really?
He says it's awesome. He says it's just.
He's always wanted to go out there. Oh man! All right, should we break now? Make the first half of the show exclusively John Tavares,
sure.
And then hammer everything out in the second half. Let's do that. So stick around. I believe we got Paul Stastny. We got tons of stuff. We got like 30 more minutes worth of stuff. That's how I measure it. And we'll be back in however long the ads take. I got no idea. So see you then.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Well, we're back. And as we talked about at the top of the show, at Biscuits, Colon, a Hockey Podcast, which I still don't think I said at the top of the show this week, but I don't know. You guys know what this podcast is. There were some trades. There wasn't really a whole mess of them. There wasn't a whole bunch of stuff that went down on draft weekend, but there were some moves. And that Calgary Carolina trade. What did you think of it? Because my initial thought was that seems fair, but then I went to Twitter and it was like Calgary got absolutely robbed because they don't want Dougie Hamilton going to museums by himself or whatever.
That's Twitter, right? Like the consensus on trades gets formed so quickly. You go from like, oh yeah, I don't know, and then 30 seconds later you're like, I have super strong opinions.
Look how dumb Calgary is. Like, I get the premise that Dougie Hamilton's the best player in the trade, but I always go back to my initial feelings about Carolina, which is Bill Peters kind of ran that thing into the ground, and there were a lot of guys there that maybe underperformed because of that. So maybe Noah Hanifin and Elias Lindholm go to Calgary, and suddenly it's like, oh, wow, these are the guys we thought they could be. Like, I think there's that potential for the trade, but people...
I'm going to point out a small flaw in that theory. Which is that if Bill Peters was holding down.
That's right.
Those two guys. I got bad news for them when they get.
Oh, no. Those poor. I didn't even consider that. I completely forgot about him being the coach in Calgary. Oh, no.
Whoops.
Oh, what a nightmare for those guys. Oh, never mind. Yeah. Yeah. Now I get it. I completely forgot that Bill Peters was the coach in Calgary. Yeah. Carolina wins that trade for sure.
Yeah.
I take it all back. Good job.
I mean, I like this trade just because it was kind of, I mean, this was pretty much an old school hockey trade, right? Like this wasn't futures or rentals or all cap. I mean, obviously every trade you worry about the cap and contracts and that, but it wasn't that kind of all out salary dump type of thing. It was just Calgary had one guy they wanted to move. Carolina had two. The part that does kind of make me scratch my head a little bit is that Calgary ends up throwing the prospect in where they're giving up the best player already, like Hamilton and Ferland for Elias and Lindholm and Hanifin. Yeah, that, I mean, maybe that's pretty close to even, but when they throw in the prospect, but it's a prospect that they apparently felt they couldn't get signed.
Right.
So they're going to lose him for nothing. So yeah, I mean, the part that concerns me as it always does with this sort of stuff, is when you hear these kind of whispers like, oh, this guy wasn't fitting in the room.
Yeah.
Or he was going to museums or whatever else. And it's kind of like, what are we making the decisions based on? And you know, you think back to that video of the Bruins brain trust sitting around deciding to trade Tyler Seguin because he just wasn't going to fit in. It just wasn't a Bruins type of guy. And I think these teams kind of think themselves into circles and end up sometimes convincing themselves they got to move on from somebody. And, you know, is that the case? Or is, you know, maybe not. I mean, Hamilton's been traded twice, so maybe there is something to this, and I don't know. But, I thought it was... I like the trade for Carolina. You know, take advantage of another team feeling they need to move a guy, get the best player, move out two pieces that you were already shopping, and you know, take your chance. And if Dougie Hamilton gets here and he's, you know, some book-loving nerd who doesn't fit in, then
nerd. You
deal with that down the line.
What if, here's my theory, what if Dougie Hamilton really doesn't care about hockey, but he's really cheap and doesn't want to fly places on his own dollar? So he says to himself, hey, let me hang out in Boston for a few years and really soak in the culture, the museums, the aquarium. Once I get all that, force a trade to a new country where I can see some stuff up there. Like, there's probably some cool stuff in Calgary. Like, oh, let's go check out the cattle ranch or whatever. And now he's like, I'm done with that. Where can I go next? How about the South? So now he's done the Northeast. He's done Canada. Now he's doing the South. So maybe
Hamilton World Tour.
Yeah, like, he just wants to, like, he's like, oh, man, I love that Carolina barbecue, man. That vinegar-based barbecue is so good, but, like, I can't get it up here. So maybe I could just be like, guys, I don't want to go to Vegas. I think I just want to watch Hamilton and listen to the soundtrack when I get home by myself. And they're just like, nerd, and they trade him. And he's like, yes, my plan worked again.
There we go. Beautiful. Yeah, I don't know. I love that, like, Tyler Seguin gets traded for partying too much and Dougie Hamilton gets traded for not partying enough. And
like, what do these people want? Like, what do they want? Like, if you're Calgary, you don't really have enough talent to be that, you know, picky about your players' personalities. Like I read the Elliot's 31 Thoughts, and Elliot was just talking about how it really wasn't about, you know, being a dork or whatever. It was about him not being a leader in the locker room, and he got mad about, you know, his brother getting traded or whatever. But okay, A, your brother gets traded, you're gonna have the sads about it. I'm sure Jamie was sad when Jordy left Dallas. Like, that's part of the deal. Like, you bring the brother there because you want them to be happy. So when you separate them, you should expect them to be sad. But the whole partying thing, man, like if you're I guess when Boston traded Dougie Hamilton, they were kind of rich with talent, so they could just maybe get away with that sort of thing. But you know, you're Calgary, man. Like, you're not going to the playoffs every year. You can't trade a top 10 defenseman in the league for, I mean, again, going back, I still think maybe those two guys could work out there, even though Bill Peters might just continue to run them into the ground, because I forgot Bill Peters was the coach in Calgary now. But yeah, that's probably going to be a good deal for Carolina.
I mean, like, I do get it a little bit. Like, if, you know, we've all worked in offices and that, and you know, it's like, hey, we're all going out to lunch, and there's like the one guy who's like, no, I'm just gonna sit at my desk and eat. And you're kind of like, all right, weirdo, you can't just come eat with the rest of us. But
I brought my tuna fish from home. I'm gonna eat this at my desk.
I'm gonna microwave it, and then it's all right. Let's get that guy out of here. But if he's the best employee at the widget factory, like, you think you'd maybe be okay with that? But I don't know. Time will tell. But I like it for Carolina. Even if there's some risk with whatever's going on with Dougie Hamilton, personality wise, it's a risk worth taking. So I like that deal. And then I also like the Washington Carolina deal, where Washington trades Grubauer and dumps Brooks Orpik's contract
to Colorado. We're really on top of things today.
Exactly. Yeah. and gets a second round. Washington gets a second round pick, and they
it's a good dump,
which was less than what we thought they were gonna, like, we thought they were going to get a first for Grubauer, but instead you dump the salary, and then they use that salary to get John Carlson re-signed to a expensive contract that will probably backfire, but also is the kind of thing that you sort of wind up having to do when you win a Stanley Cup and you're trying to keep that team together. And Colorado uses money to buy by a goalie who's going to end up probably being their starter for a second instead of a first. Makes sense. Makes sense to me.
Yeah, and somebody laid out the list of all the available goaltenders in the market July 1st and maybe via trade, so you can kind of understand why they don't get a first for Grubauer. But, you know, you get Orpik off the books, which was really a problem for them.
Brooks, they could get him back. You could bring him back now, apparently, because he was bought out by the other team.
I don't believe that's a thing. Like, how many times has that ever happened where a guy was so bad and so expensive they traded him to another team who bought him out and then they brought him back instantly?
I can't remember that ever. Yeah, I mean, it happened. See it, you know, you see it in the NFL where there's no guaranteed contracts and you cut a guy and then sign him to a new deal the next day. How often do you see a guy get traded for the purpose of being bought out in the first place? Like, that's relatively rare. So I could see this could be like a new thing that teams figure out that, wait a second, we got this guy. He's got a bat. You know, we don't like the last year or two of his contract. Trade him somewhere. Let him get bought out. We re-sign him. As long as Brooks Orpik makes a third of his salary on the next deal, he still comes out ahead financially. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that became a thing.
Hmm.
Yeah, and then the NHL, and then 2 years later, the NHL will decide they don't like it, and they'll tell teams to stop doing it, even though they've allowed them to do it.
Oh, there's a thing we didn't plan to talk about that I completely just flashed on. Gary Bettman telling the GMs to not give big bonuses for the lockout year. Like, what? Like, just don't have a lockout, man. Like, stop preparing for lockouts 2 years in advance every 7 years, and just, you can't tell GMs to do that.
No,
like, that seems
the
like
GM should. Yeah, it does, right? Like, you can't. Right. The commissioner can't dictate the terms of legal contracts based on his plans to lock out players.
Right.
So
right. Like, if you don't think there's going to be a lockout, just remember that Gary Bettman 2 years in advance told GMs to not give out lockout bonuses that protect you from the lockout, because he knows the lockout's coming. Oh, God, this league.
Speaking of Gary Bettman, because we'll slip into this, then we can go back to the draft trades and stuff that didn't happen, because there was a lot of stuff that we thought would happen that didn't. But I just want to get your take on this. So, start of the NHL draft, Friday night, Gary Bettman walks out on the stage. The fans in Dallas all boo.
Right.
Gary Bettman says, no, don't boo me, because we're doing this Humboldt tribute, E.J. McGuire award, all this. Like, they're doing like a serious thing. He says, don't boo me. Boo. Wait until this is over. Then you can boo me as much as you want. They do the tribute. They come back from it. The fans start to boo again. Bettman says, no, we're not done. So they stop booing. And I've seen people who are like, oh, yeah, Dallas, have some class. How could they boo during this, you know, very serious? And it was a very well done tribute and everything else. So what are your thoughts on that? Are we mad at Dallas fans?
No.
For booing? Good. All right.
Because you don't, if you're going to do that off the top, when you know you're going to get booed, when you're getting booed so, you know, feverishly and constantly at everything you go to, that you're now planning comebacks weeks in advance so you can say them into the microphone before you give out the cup. You should know, if you're going to do an E.J. McGuire Humboldt tribute,
right,
you should probably have literally anyone else at the NHL do it. Literally anyone else.
Do it at some other point and do it, like, you know, with warning, where somebody else comes out and says, hey, we're doing this.
Yeah.
You know, so here's my question. Did the league just not think this through?
Yes.
Or did they think this through and they got the reaction they wanted so that they could then go, oh, poor Gary Bettman, those terrible fans, and, you know, kind of, or is that too cynical of me to think that they knew exactly what was going to happen? And
I always lean towards the NHL not thinking things through. I feel like there's enough evidence over time that shows they don't think things through. Like, hey, let's have a magician at the NHL awards. Should he should he rehearse his things? Nah, just let him do his card tricks.
Poor guy.
I mean, oh God, I just.
All right. Here's let me say two other things then on the Gary Bettman thing, because I think we're on the same page as far as the booing. But first of all, like, every time Gary Bettman gets booed, he comes out, he makes the same joke. Like, the same thing happens every time. He comes out, he gets booed, he goes, oh, thanks for that warm welcome, or, you know, good to see that the fans here are passionate. And half my Twitter timeline is immediately like, great job, Gary Bettman.
Yeah.
Wow, look at it. He's embracing it. He's having fun with it. What a great... It's the same joke about how he doesn't care about getting booed. And then 15 seconds later, he's so flustered that he's like lost his place, and he's like, you know, the hand is starting to wave around, and everybody's like, ah, cool as a cucumber. There's Gary. It's like, what are you watching? He has one pre-written joke that he's been doing for like 14 years now, and then it just all goes to hell. And I wish anybody I knew in my life was as easy to impress as people watching Gary Bettman get booed. So that's take number one.
Well, but before you go to take two, I just want to point out that, you know, when it comes to people liking the same joke, the Bazinga show's been on the air for like 12 years, where the guy says Bazinga, and I just think people like to hear the same joke over and over again. Once they hear a joke, they like that? I think that's just the thing. I'm with you.
You know what?
I'm with you.
I have thoughts on people liking the same joke over and over again, but I'll get to that after we do the sit-ins at the end of the show.
Okay.
Take two. Like, does it feel like we have just skipped past the whole thing where it's kind of weird that the face of a company gets booed every single time he appears in public? Hmm. Like, everyone's just kind of like, ah, yeah, it's the booing. It's like, the CEO of a company isn't supposed to be so hated by all the customers that they like instinctively have this like visceral negative reaction every time they see his face. Like, that's a little weird and maybe a sign that things aren't being right. Like, I know revenue's up, but I feel like we just skip past the part where it's like, oh, look, 10,000 customers of this company hate that company's leader so much that they will boo over a tribute to, like, I don't know. I guess not. Yeah, Bettman's doing a great job. It's all fun and games. But
Sean, I'm glad you brought this up because I want to take the rest of the time on the show to talk about civility. I think we have lost civility in this country where, you know, Gary Bettman just can't go out in public without being booed. You know what? This is not the democracy that I believe in, where people can boo someone. And I mean, that's the worst thing that's ever happened to anyone ever, is to get booed. And I just, you know, look for my New York Times opinion piece on this about civility.
Gary Bettman was the canary in the coal mine of America losing its way, by Dave Lozo.
Oh man, what a time to be alive.
All right. So back to the draft, where a lot of big names that we thought would be potentially on the move didn't move. No Erik Karlsson trade to talk about. No Max Pacioretty trade. Rumored that there was one that was maybe getting close, but that didn't happen. Really a quiet weekend, you know, and the draft itself we could talk about a little bit, but I think that played out, you know, more or less as expected, and, you know, with the typical reaches and, you know, guys falling and that sort of thing. But as far as like the fireworks around it and teams making moves, there was the only those two trades involving legitimate NHL players, and that's it. And now, you know, it's the last few years we have seen kind of the draft weekend comes and then it's a couple of days after where we get some bigger trades. So maybe we're right on the verge of that, but maybe not. Like, maybe there was more than a few GMs who were like, yeah, it's super quiet right now. And I don't know if it's maybe Tavares is the logjam or what it is, but I wonder if maybe the trade market, I mean, we had more Mike Hoffman trades last Tuesday than we had, you know, major hockey trades on any day of the draft weekend.
Yeah, it was really weird when the Caps Colorado trade went down and everyone was like, wow. And I'm like, wait, so a team traded a backup goalie and its worst defenseman to get bought out, and this is like the biggest thing ever? Like, this is the thing that's like, oh, since you were complaining about Gary Bettman, people on Twitter who were like, wow, he's so hilarious and quick and sharp, I would like to point out that this is in a way, not necessarily for sure, definitively, the worst time of year, because this is the time of year when everybody quote tweets a trade with some nonsensical, uninformative comment like, wow, they did it, check this out. And it's just like, just hit the retweet button, man. Like, I follow Bob McKenzie. Like, Bob McKenzie's tweeted out the trade. You don't need to then like type it up yourself. Breaking. Like, yeah, breaking. You're not breaking it. Someone else already broke it. The team tweeted it out. Just retweet the team and then we'll all see it. So it's just an entire timeline of like quote tweets.
I'm confirming
like
that this.
Oh, confirming. By the way, if a reporter tweets out a breaking news story. What was the one? There was one over the weekend. I forget what it was. Maybe it was, I don't think it was the Orpik trade. I think, I want to say it was something Larry Brooks, the New York Post.
Tavares list.
Tavares list. Yeah. He tweeted it out. Larry Brooks has been in New York forever. John Tavares plays in New York. Larry Brooks is well connected. Larry Brooks has sources. He tweeted out he's going to be meeting with five teams. If you personally want to confirm that for yourself, just, you know, talk to your own sources and say, is this true? And then they say yes. You do not need to go onto Twitter and then confirm the report that was correct in the first place, that you did not need to make sure was correct for other people. You just wanted to make sure for yourself. Like, yeah. I understand confirming something that's a rumor that you're hearing somewhere offline, and you want to go out and say, I can confirm the rumors out there that blah, 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 blah. You do not need to confirm stuff for other people. It's so self-serving. I hate it so much. Yeah. It drives me absolutely insane.
Because people, I mean, you know, and I think people understand this, like when you confirm something, you're not doing that for your readers. Right. You're doing it for your own boss. You're basically being like, all right, I got beat on this, but I have sources too. I'm plugged in. I just happened to get it.
Like
30
once,
seconds afterwards.
Once you confirm that original report, why don't you just retweet the original report? Because you don't have the original report. Someone else does. Like, just retweet. Like, oh, man, I could go.
Gotta
I
get
could,
those sweet retweets.
I could go on a rant about, like, aggregation and, like, that sort of stuff for days. But, like,
that's what I'm going to start doing. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take, like, when Elliot or Bob McKenzie or somebody breaks a trade, I'm just going to take a screen cap of their trade. I'm going to crop out who it was. I'm going to tweet that screen cap with "who did this" in all caps and just soak in the 50,000 retweet, and then like add a little note 2 days later, like apparently it was Elliot Friedman. Yeah. Here's a link to, you know, please give him credit, guys. Come on. I wasn't intentionally. Every time you type "who did this" into Twitter, a little box should pop up that says like, hey, jerk, why don't you find out before you steal the credit from some anonymous cartoonist that you're ripping off from. Like, why don't you read the Reddit thread you stole this from so that you can
don't even do the thing with the tweet, like screenshot Elliot's actual 31 thoughts and like don't change the typeface or anything. Yeah. So everyone just knows what it is. What's this from?
Who did this,
fam?
Who did this, fam?
Fam, who did this? I don't know. And then like 4 seconds later, someone's like, I already figured out who it was. Did you even bother to look? Like, no, my friend texted it to me.
Oh, sorry. I got it off Facebook.
Yeah.
What Facebook? The 31 Thoughts Facebook page. There has never the only good example of anyone ever doing that was years ago on Grantland. I did this big Venn diagram of the like basically the most hated people in hockey, and I had all these different categories. And it was all these overlapping things of all of these different names and people. And then right in the middle, the only person who hit every single category of hockey hatred was Sean Avery. And his picture was right in there. And Sean Avery took that, stripped out the credit, and like retweeted it.
No, Sean
and I'm like,
Avery?
Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's a jerk. Wait a second. All right, that's good. It was like a meta jerk move where I was like, I kind of respect it.
Yeah.
It's sort of. I feel like that actually worked.
Well, speaking of Sean Avery, the Hall of Fame announcements are going to come out Tuesday afternoon, and we record Tuesday morning. So we know we're not going to have it. We're not going to be surprised. Like, hey, look at that. So real quick, Marty Brodeur for sure.
Brodeur
then,
for sure.
And then it's like people – there seems to be a lot of Willie O'Ree talk this year. So I think it's going to happen. Like the people who are talking don't have the votes necessarily, but – There's a lot of push, a lot of fervor.
But it is weird that we've gone from like Willie O'Ree being a fringe candidate year after year, at least as far as we know. We never know. Maybe he's been right there in the behind the scenes voting, but and then like this year, like everybody's just on board. I think partly it's because he's been more visible the last year. There's been, you know, he's been showing up at events and that sort of thing. But yeah, I think he has to get in, and that'll be great. And we should all be happy when that happens, but let's not lose track of the fact that this should have happened years ago.
I also thought it might not happen because he got some sort of like award at the draft, and I was like, oh, that feels like one of those things where they do that in advance. So it's like, well, hey, we gave him this, like, yeah, we left him off this year, but I mean, we're honoring him. So I'm kind of worried that they're not going to put him in based on that, but I don't know. We'll
the see. Only thing is you'd have him go in as a builder, and I think they're only allowed two builders a year. So, I mean, if somebody's uncle is really needs his, you know, it's his turn, hopefully. But I think, yeah, I would assume he's in.
Haley,
so from there, it's
Wickenheiser. Haley Wickenheiser seems
No, the thing with Haley Wickenheiser is she's not eligible yet. She hasn't hit the 3-year mark, but there has been like this minor, like I saw something in the Toronto Star today. I've seen a few other places where they're saying they should waive the 3 years, which is something they used to do. But after Wayne Gretzky, they put a stop to it. They said, we're not doing that anymore. We don't want to have like an extra level of Hall of Fame.
Chris Pronger. Chris Pronger. I didn't realize. When was her last international tournament?
She only retired like I want to say last year. Might have been 2 years ago. It wasn't 3 years ago.
Look at that.
Like, you know, as an active player, I don't know when the actual tournament was, but it's she's
last time I listened to John Shannon.
Yeah, I don't think she's eligible. There are, you know, there of the women's players. There's Jana Heffer, Jennifer Botterill. Manon Rayon was an interesting one. That name comes up every now and then because, yeah, like, you know, I mean, a trailblazer didn't have the international resume, but couldn't have the international resume because that was before that time. I don't know. That's an interesting one.
What dudes are going to get in besides Brodeur, do you think?
So the other big first-year candidate is Martin St-Louis.
He shouldn't get in.
Shouldn't get in at all, or shouldn't get in first ballot?
I don't know. Like, I'm at a point now at the Hall of Fame where, like, I just feel like they're just putting in dudes they liked, you know?
I don't know. I get
the case for it, but, like, I'm just not there.
I think the case for, you know, for him is he had about a decade from 2004 to 2013, so almost a decade, where he was a first or second team all-star pretty much every other year. And I look at those all, I mean, if you're a first or second team all-star, that means you're in the conversation for the best in the league at your position. And I always want to know, you know, how were they in the conversation as the best in the league at their position for how long and how often? And then did they ever transcend that into being the best in the league, period, like being in that best player in hockey discussion? And he did win a Hart trophy.
Yeah, it was a bad year.
He won
year,
two
though.
Scoring. Yeah, it was a bad year, but he won a Hart. He won two scoring titles many years apart. Like, I feel like he's there. If you buy into this idea that going in on the first ballot should be some sort of special, you know, additional honor, then maybe he's not there. Maybe they hold him till next year. But he's one of those guys where the more I look at his case, the stronger I think it gets. And the interesting thing is then because the other guy who seems to be showing up on a lot of lists is Daniel Alfredsson, who's kind of the reverse case of that. Like two guys, same position. Alfredsson's got the bigger career numbers because he played longer. Like St. Louis didn't really become a legitimate NHLer until he was 25 or so.
23, 24. Oh, yeah, 23 is, I think, when he broke in, right? Yeah, so...
Yeah, so, you know, Alfredsson played longer. He broke in late too, but he played into his 40s. But Alfredsson's a guy, he had only 1 year where he was a first or second team. He was a second team All-Star in the first year after the lockout. That was also the only year he was in the top five in Hart voting. In fact, it was the only year he was in the top 15 in Hart voting. So, great player, lots of, you know, racked up very good numbers, never really in that best player conversation the way St. Louis was. Not as often in the best player disposition conversation. Like, I think St. Louis got the stronger case. Alfredsson's going to get in, and probably today, because he also, you know, he's a guy everyone likes, played for one team pretty much his whole career, which really seems to help people's cases. So I think he's in. But I think St. Louis got at least as strong, probably a stronger case. So it'll be a little weird when, you know, if Alfredsson gets in and then St. Louis doesn't, because they have to, because it's Alfredsson's second year too. So he's another one of those guys where maybe they just felt like last year, don't make him a first ballot guy, make him wait a year, and then this is his year.
Love that stuff. Sergei Zubov, Second best defenseman of his era behind Nick Lidstrom. Just FYI.
Then you got all the other guys, right? Zubov, Curtis Joseph, Roenick, Fleury, Keith Kachuk.
Don't lump Sergei Zubov in with Curtis Joseph and Jeremy Roenick. It's blasphemous in this part of the in the hockey world. Sergei Zubov should have been in 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago.
Hey man, if you can get a guy who was a Norris finalist once into the Hall of Fame, that's
idiots who vote for these things and like, oh man, whatever. Yeah, we probably gotta wrap it up here soon. You have any
I'll just quickly throw out as somebody that I wouldn't that I feel like could be getting back into the car is Doug Wilson. Doug Wilson has a great case as a player.
I mean, that Mike Hoffman trade was good, but let's like relax here. I mean, come on.
Well, I honestly think like the fact that he's continues to like kick butt as an executive kind of helps. Like he's not some guy who just fades out and gets forgotten, or a guy like Kevin Lowe, where maybe he has the case, but every time you say his name, fans are like, "Oh, that guy, that terrible GM." I don't know, Doug. I looked at Doug Wilson years ago, and he's got a pretty strong case, stronger than Sergei Zubov, but you know. But he's been waiting 22 years, so really, if he wasn't in before, what's changed?
All right, you want to do the reader questions and then call it a day.
Let's do it.
Megan-salty 4x4ever. I don't know what that means. She's salty. Oh, speaking of salty, by the way, duck bacon. Duck bacon is where it's at. Just if you ever go to Dallas, order some duck bacon. She wants to know: is calling it quote hockey culture just a way of explaining away how absolutely toxic most NHL organizations seem to be, thinking specifically of Voinoff and the dumb rumor about Hamilton not fitting in? Yeah, when you pair the Dougie Hamilton thing with the Slava Voinoff thing, where teams are like, we can't rule out signing Slava Voinoff, and there's still a team out there that's like, yeah, Dougie Hamilton likes to be by himself sometimes on the road. We got to get rid of him. That's an odd pairing, to say the least.
It is. But you know what? That's why hockey culture is the right term, because it's not like social culture, it's not society. It's these weird rules in hockey where some things are, you know, Mike Hoffman was untouchable for a lot of teams, and Slava Voinov seems to not be. And it's bizarre. It's not the same set of rules that would govern pretty much any other subgroup of society, but hockey is
terrible.
Its own thing. And, you know, and other sports are like this too in their own way, but. Yeah, it just feels like GMs go from overthinking it on some players and finding reasons not to want the guy. And then apparently if you disappear off to the KHL for a few years, they go to completely underthinking it or not thinking it at all.
Zach, who will overpay Paul Stastny as their Tavares plan B, and why is it Toronto?
I don't think it's Toronto. I don't think that's it. I mean, it could be, but I feel like that's more of it. Like San Jose, that would be a perfect place if they don't get Tavares. They've got all the money. They can do a longer term deal. I don't know. Overpay him. I feel like Stastny's like a better player than people think. And the thing that'll be interesting with him is he signed 4 years ago. He signed the big UFA contract. But it was 4 years ago, which means he signed a 4-year deal and he's UFA again, which he was like the one guy who didn't go for the 7 or 8 year deal. And maybe it wasn't on the table, but he took, I think, higher cap hit than people expected. I think he came in at like $7 million, but he only took 4 years, which I think is the sort of deal that teams should be pushing for. So it'll be interesting to see if he does that again or if he looks for as many years as possible, because he definitely came out ahead money-wise the last little while. If he hits another big contract, then that strategy will work really well for him.
I think it's San Jose if they don't get Tavares, and I think it's the Islanders if they don't get Tavares. I feel like they're going to the Islanders are going to need to sort of like sell their fans on something, and they kind of did that with Andrew Ladd that one off season. And while San Jose is going to be like, well, we have this money to spend, Paul Stastny's a good center, let's pay him maybe a little more than we should.
Or the other one is Montreal, because they need a center, and they didn't even get an invite on John Tavares. And there's been a lot of Tavares talk all year. And I guess like Mark Bergevin's apparently like good friends with Tavares' agent or something. And a lot of people thought that would at least get him in the door, and it didn't. And as we all know, there's always a lot of pressure in Montreal to do something. So that could be a situation where, you know, you bring it in a Stastny in Quebec, It's kind of a connection, sort of, not really.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, Lua was the GM when his dad played in Jersey, so maybe there's something there. There's maybe. Always a connection. It's amazing how, like, no matter where a guy signs, you can always, like, go back through, like, a Hockey DB page and find, like, some weird connection from, like, when he was 16 or something. Oh, he played for Pete DeBoer.
Even during the draft, like, at some point, we got to reckon with the fact there's only, like, 8 families still producing hockey players, and they're just, like, cycling through. Like, everybody is, like, the son or the nephew or something, but...
It's a beautiful game. All right, well, I believe that's all the time we have for today. We will be back next week, and we will talk about all of the great contracts that are efficient and well thought out and not terrible overpayments. And we'll do all that on probably the usual day. We got to figure that out, I guess. But yeah, we'll do it after July 1st, obviously, and before July 4th when everybody goes away. And thanks for being our loyal readers and reading us every week. And continue to read us until the season's over and we're not writing stuff anymore.
And then don't read anybody.
Anybody else. Don't.
For the rest of the summer. Just save your eyeballs for September.
Don't click on anything that Elliot Friedman puts out with 31 Thoughts. Like, just don't. Don't give him the satisfaction. Just click on us. Only us. And also, don't forget to pre-order Sean's book.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The 100 Greatest Histories of America.
Yes. No. If you haven't pre-ordered the book yet, do it. If you have, do it again, just in case. Just to be safe.
Just get as many as you can. They're going to be collector's items. So yeah, that's it. We'll see you next week. And thanks for being a part of Biscuits Colon, a hockey podcast. See ya.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.